My name is Dominic Fano, and today we are talking with Glenn Kraus, founder and CEO of Core CDI. And the topic of discussion today will be the necessities in documentation for billing in 99215. So Glenn, can you speak on your experiences with physicians billing this high code?
Right, yeah. Thank you, Dominic. Glad to be on the podcast. Yes, level fives is obviously even a new patient 99205 or established patient 99215. They are at risk E&M because it's one obviously is the highest RVUs with the highest that turns into the highest reimbursement from all payers, including Medicare. And fives traditionally been problematic in terms of medical necessity and or meeting the E&M requirements for a level five. So a level five is if you look at the bell curve, traditional bell curve, that's a proxy for acuity in the office. It represents 10% level ones, 20% level twos, 40% level threes, 20% level fours, and 10% level fives. So I see level fives assigned when it's not medically necessary and or the documentation for requirements of the E&M are not met, or you may have a case where the E&M and documentation and medical necessity are met, but physicians are reluctant to assign a level four, a level five because they think it's something that's going to get them in trouble. My philosophy on level fives is from a standpoint of a medical necessity, it requires a documentation and also a representation of a patient who's truly ill. A few examples I can give you: when a patient, let's say, comes in with a new problem of back pain, no previous history of back pain, no osteoporosis, no risk factors for any disease processes that can contribute to back pain, and they come in with excruciating pain, new problem to the physician. And I may order, maybe reluctantly, on some controlled substance for pain management, and send the patient to, let's say, orthopedic surgeon or a specialist to evaluate further the cause of the back pain. And also, I may order a CT scan, perhaps an MRI, if it met one of the red flags for back pain, to order an MRI. That potentially could be a level five because you have a acute condition that's new, where the diagnosis is not clear, requiring further workup, and you have a controlled substance. Another, I think, example would be a patient who comes in, let's say, with extreme shortness of breath. They make an appointment in your office, and you bring the patient back, and you see that the patient has a high acuity, let's say, shortness of breath, and you're very concerned about pulmonary embolism in a patient with various risk factors, including a previous pulmonary emboli, but you do the workup in the office and determine that this is a high acuity. Let me send the patient over to the ER, and you don't see the patient in the ER because that office visit would be part of your E&M in the ER. That could potentially be a level five. So those are kind of the scenarios I see as level fives in the office.
Glenn, so like we did when we were talking about level threes and level fours, we broke it down into, the history, the physical exam, and then the complexity of the case. So to start with the history, what are the necessary components to bill a level five for the first section that you
Oh, sure.
discussed?
Good question, Dominic. So the three elements, the three components: history, physical, medical decision making in a level five 99205 new patient or established patient 99215 are exactly the same. You're looking for a comprehensive history, comprehensive exam, and high complexity medical decision making. The only difference in terms of level five new versus established, that under the level five new, you'd have to have three out of three In other words, comprehensive history, comprehensive exam, and high complexity medical decision making. And the established the requirements to meet a level five would require 2 out of the 3. So you still would be looking for a comprehensive history, comprehensive exam, and high complexity medical decision making. And we went over the scenario just a minute ago about high complexity medical decision making. So in the established patient, you only need 2 out of the 3. So if you had high complexity of medical decision making, then you would then either you would need high comprehensive exam, which is A plus on the physical exam, and then your comprehensive history would be at least 4 elements of the history of present illness, which represents an extended history of present illness, a complete review of systems. 10 plus on the review of systems, and for your past family and social history, you would only need 2 out of the 3, past family or social, just 2 out of the 3 in an established patient. But basically, comprehensive history, comprehensive exam, high complexity medical decision-making, level 5.
Now, for the second section, for the physical exam,
yes?
Expand on the necessities for level 5.
Okay, for the physical exam, what's required would be a comprehensive exam. So what is required is 8 plus on the body areas or organ systems. And, of course, you need to call into question, let's say, the medical necessity for the physical exam of doing 8 plus. That goes back to portraying a severe patient in your history of present illness and the nature of the presenting problem, which obviously is the chief complaint, history of present illness, and the intertwining of your clinical judgment to decide how extensive my physical exam should be based on my history of present illness and my review of systems and past family social history.
And for that comprehensive exam, you know, hitting 8 or more systems, mm-hmm. Is that a for sure need or requirement to bill?
Yes, it is. A good question. Another good question, Dominic. I think this is important to kind of reinforce, is that for the new patient, 99205, you're required to meet the following comprehensive history, comprehensive exam, and high complexity. So for new patient, you must have 8 plus on the physical exam. On an established patient, you could have, because of 2 out of 3 of components of the E&M, you just need 2 out of 3. So if I met the elements requirements of a comprehensive history, okay, and I had high complexity medical decision-making, as we discussed, then you wouldn't necessarily require a comprehensive exam. You still could achieve a level 5 on a established patient with less than, you could have a detailed, which is up to 7 systems with more detail of each organ system, or even expanded problem focused, which is 2 to 7 as well. So the answer is for a new patient, must have comprehensive exam. For an established patient, not necessary, as long as you have either a comprehensive history or comprehensive exam, a comprehensive medical decision-making, 2 out of the 3 of those 3 components.
Now, for medical decision-making, you know, because of the rarity of the case, you know, can you touch base on some necessities to meet the requirements for medical decision-making for a level 5 visit?
Okay. For a level 5, established or new, as I mentioned, what is required for in terms of work performed and the need for work performing and the documentation of that work is either a new problem that's requires additional workup. So newer problem to the physician that requires workup. We mentioned the example of the likely pulmonary embolism, or the patient who comes in with excruciating back pain that you refer to the ER because of the acute condition. So in terms of meeting the medical decision making, you would either have a new problem with requiring additional workup, and you have the table of risk. And I don't put a lot of emphasis on the table of risk because it really, in my mind, medical decision making is takes into account the number of diagnoses and treatment options. As I mentioned, a new problem, okay, and the table of risk, meaning I really focus on the presenting problem, which is, and the management options selected, okay, if you plug that into the table of risk, whatever is highest, you would either have, I can see a situation where you'd have a new problem with additional workup, or if you had established problem that's worsening. So if I had two established problems that were worsening, so that would be 4 points in terms of your number of diagnosis management options. Now I pair that with my table of risk to achieve high complexity. I'm looking for either a two or more chronic illnesses that are acutely exacerbated, or one new problem requiring further workup. If you look at the table of risk, examples in the table of risk, which don't explain obviously every patient, they give you some examples of high complexity from in terms of the table of risk, and is one or more chronic illnesses with severe exacerbation, progression of side effects of treatment, i.e., severe COPD exacerbation that you see in the office and believe the patient needs to be seen urgently or emergently in the ER. Or the second would be acute or chronic illness or injury that may pose a threat to life or body function. They give some examples of multiple trauma, acute MI, pulmonary embolus, severe respiratory distress, progressive severe rheumatoid arthritis, psychiatric illness with potential threat or self or others, peritonitis or acute renal failure. So you may not see that a onslaught of patients with that example. And the third is an abrupt change in neurologic status, i.e. seizure, TIA, weaknesses, or sensory loss. So those are the actual three bullet points that we have in high for the high complexity in terms of presenting problem. If you look at the management options selected, they give you examples of leptic major surgery, emergency major surgery. So those aren't relevant to the office. We talked about parental controlled substances, drug therapy requiring intensive monitoring for toxicity, and decision not to resuscitate or to de-escalate care. So I highly encourage physicians to become not so much familiar from a coding perspective, but from a standpoint of a clinical perspective, what is considered high complexity from a standpoint of presenting problems or management options selected.
Now, a different way to do it is by calculating the points based on the number of diagnosis or treatment options and or the amount and or complexity of data reviewed. So do you need both? Do you need only one to meet the magic number to hit that high complexity?
No, you actually need it two out of a three. So if you look at the number, the elements of medical decision-making, there are three elements. Number of diagnoses or treatment options, as we discussed, amount and complexity of data reviewed. That's documented in the chart. Very important to consider that. And the table of risk. So in order to meet a high complexity in medical decision-making, the requirements are two out of three have to meet the requirements of high complexity. So if you had four or more bullet points in the number of diagnoses and treatment options, you had the highest risk in the table of risk. We went over that just briefly a few minutes ago, or extensive, greater than or equal to four points in the amount of complexity of data, two out of the three. So you could have greater than or equal to four in my number of diagnosis and treatment options points, and I could have my highest risk, but let's say I didn't order a lot of data. I don't have a lot of data elements, so the amount of complexity of data to meet that greater than or equal 4 points, then you still can achieve a high complexity. So it's important to know that for your high complexity medical decision making, it's either two out of the three. So the number of diagnoses and treatment options greater than or equal 4 points, the highest risk in terms of my table of risk or my amount and complexity of data greater than or equal 4 points, which is called extensive, just meeting 2 out of the 3 is sufficient to achieve high complexity medical decision making.
Now, Glenn, for most training facilities, this table that you've just referred to, with all of the points calculated and the risk table, most organizations have this readily available, but for someone who doesn't, like, how would you find this table and this kind of spreadsheet of how to like calculate these points?
It's a Medicare tool that all payers for the most part use for the 95 guidelines. So you can go to your Medicare administrative contractor's website, which is the contractor that processes the physician Part B claims. So I'd be asking in my office, who's my MAC or Medicare administrative contractor? Go to the Part B section of the website, and if you look under the tab of E&M, there's a lot of valuable resources that physicians could take advantage of. But this would be posted on the MAC's website. I happen to like the tool the way it's presented in the Novitas, which is the MAC for Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and several other states. I like to use theirs because it's logically laid out and easy to understand from a clinical medicine perspective.
Well, Glenn, thank you for talking about this subject. I do hope we can find some future topics to talk about to spread to, new doctors, new residents, and medical students so that they can learn more about how to document properly.
All right. Thank you, Dominic. Appreciate the opportunity to share some valuable information with the residents, students, and even attendings who are looking for a refresher. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, thank you.